From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm producer Megan Mack.
And I'm host Evan Dawson. Our week began on the heels of weekend demonstrations in Rochester, supporting the Black Lives Matter movement. And those demonstrations saw tense confrontations with Rochester police, who arrested more than 70 people. One of the people arrested was Sapphire Williams, an urban planner who joined the protests, but says she wasn't trying to break the law. She was arrested after she made an impassioned speech in the direction of police on East Avenue.
Sapphire joined us, alongside civil rights attorney Van White. They debated what the Black Lives Matter movement needs now. Van White says it needs an agenda, just as the gay rights movement had. But Williams says an agenda can't change the culture.
When you have an issue, a systemic issue that is based in the culture, and not so much the litigation, we've seen in the past that when the law clearly spells out the illegality of discrimination and prejudice, especially in enforcing the law, and those laws are then loopholed around, and those individuals and the chain of command is defended by the Supreme Court and everything that has a political voice, how do you make that litigative change? That changes the pattern of very obvious racial profiling in stopping and arresting and incarceration that, again, is supported with the Civil Rights Act in full effect here today and many, many other laws and bills that have been passed since then to so-called protect our rights. It is cultural. It's a cultural issue that a cop feels the need to bum rush me as opposed to simply ask me to move on. No one asked me, not one person, not one cop pulled me to the side and was like, move on. Move on. No warning. I was bum rushed. And I think although I received so many emails and so many inboxed messages from people all around the world concerned for my life, asking if I was alive, that's a huge issue. That's a huge issue that the world knows that it's crossing cultural, like it's crossing the border. It's a global issue now.
My only response to that would be sometimes the law isn't as clear as you think it is. And so we had constitutional amendments that said you couldn't treat people inequitably. But yet Thurgood Marshall and others brought claims that clarified the law. So and here's the other thing. Sometimes the law doesn't speak to it. So you have to create statutes that address it. And then sometimes even when the law is clear, the courts make it clear and there's specific statutory rights that are articulated, and people don't comply, then you got to bring the sanction of money that the government has.
Exactly.
So my point is, if what you're saying is true, that it's all cultural, the implication is there's nothing we can do. And I would never concede to that. There is something we can do.
And I'm not saying that there's nothing that we can do. I'm saying that the issue is much larger than legislation. It's much larger than passing any.
A law might not change a heart.
A law might not change. Will not
what,
change a
I'll
heart.
Tell you what,
will not change.
I'll tell you what a law could do. A law or judge or a legislator or leader could get somebody the heck out of there who's not doing their job.
Absolutely.
Right?
And that is by popular vote. And how do you gain popular vote? By changing the cultural mainstream idea, popular culture, changing that mindset in order to vote those people into office. We are a democracy. Everyone who's in office right now was voted into office
right now. You realize this, though, that just because you vote in or out a mayor or a president, that the discrimination is happening in the street by the cop. I'm not excluding the power of the vote, but I'm just saying, when I first heard you talk about this, I want to make clear, and it seems like we're on the same page, that there are a lot of things we can do, and there's some things that we can do better that I think we're not doing now. I don't think this is something where you could just say, well, it's cultural.
I think we just need to pay attention to the fact that it's not the individual policemen, so to speak. It's a very high chain of command. It's entities very high in the chain of command that influence mainstream media, what we see in the media that contribute to the desensitization of American citizens to where they don't feel any type of empathy when they see a person of color, and their first action is oftentimes to ask, well, what does she do to deserve that? Rather than that is extremely alarming and unacceptable.
We should point out that in the past week, the Black Lives Matter movement has produced a 10-point agenda called Campaign Zero, and you can read it at joincampaignzero.org.
Next, we sat down with Rochester's police chief, Michael Simonelli. He responded to criticism that the police escalated the situation by wearing riot gear and seemed to be targeting black protesters.
Just looking at the arrest statistics, it seems to me the arrest was focused on conduct and not race, because the majority of people arrested were not African American. Now, again, I've said this right from the beginning, you look at this on a large scale and the result and the outcome, it's made up of multiple interactions and, you know, dialogue between various officers and people that were out there. So if we see any evidence of anything improper for any reason, we will deal with it. But at this point, that's a narrative that's going around. And at this point, and I accept that may be someone's perception, but at least the arrest statistics do not bear that out.
Okay. And just following up, because I think a lot of people who have already written into the show this morning in anticipation of this interview have essentially asked, did you need the gear and maybe some of the move back marching, the formations? It made it feel confrontational to people who didn't want to be violent. And I think in general, what they're feeling is, could you have done something like what Dallas did the night five Dallas officers were murdered? I mean, everybody agrees, one of the worst tragedies we can imagine. You saw the Dallas Police Department not only facilitating the demonstration, but at times, arm in arm with the protesters. They were tweeting pictures, standing with the protesters. Mm-hmm. It felt more supportive to some than what felt almost instantly confrontational.
Right.
Chief, do you look at what you did and do you think the next time this happens, can we be a little bit more, you know, not hands-off, but can it be less confrontational?
Well, first of all, and I'm going to address this head-on, again, that really is a false narrative about what happened, because until things got confrontational with a number of the protests, I'm not saying all, that's exactly what we did. The same way we've handled every other protest, where we facilitated them, we blocked traffic, even though it was very difficult, you know, they changing routes often, that's exactly what we did. And so the first time the protective gear came on was when a situation happened on Woodbury Street. And at that point, the sergeant decided to have his officers put their helmets on. And again, I don't know that I'm going to make an apology for that. It was based on our assessment of the situation. It did not come out in the first instance. And had protesters not engaged in certain conduct, it wouldn't have come out. I understand people have a right to disagree with what we did and the way we handled it. Certainly, I'm accountable for the judgments I made. And in the end, I'm here to explain them. But I think that, you know, creating this false narrative is not helping the dialogue. The other thing I'm going to point out that, you know, people want to compare to other cities. You're not mentioning a number of other cities where the police reacted in a much more forceful way.
Baton Rouge, others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, we tried to tailor what we did. I'm disappointed that this got to a point where we decided to make arrests. I said right from the first press conference, after weighing all the factors, I use the word reluctantly. I very, very reluctantly gave the go-ahead to give some final warnings and start making an arrest. And if there's at the next protest, we will reach out and try to, you know, work with them. And if they work with us, it won't happen.
Okay. Generally speaking, Chief, you know, you've had a chance now to see how the Black Lives Matter movement has tried to demonstrate, tried to move what they see as progress across the country.
Sure.
How do you feel about the movement?
It's very important. I mean, look, this is probably, I told this to my command staff earlier, this issue of the relationship between law enforcement and the community it serves is probably the most important domestic issue in this country right now. And I think we have to meet it head on. And I am hopeful that we can use this incident as maybe a springboard to have a better dialogue and to reach out to each other. And since I've been chief, we've been making a lot of effort to reach out to different groups. There's no group or no individual that we won't sit down and talk to and try to come to a better place.
Let's shift now to a discussion about another emotional subject, abortion. It was sparked when Donald Trump said in an interview that he wanted abortion made illegal, and if that happens, then there would have to be some form of criminal penalties for women who have them.
Trump reversed his position after a backlash, but it prompted questions about whether it's consistent to say that abortion is murder, but there should be no penalty for having one. So we invited Father Jim Hughes, a former priest who works in social justice and counseling.
We also talked to Rachel Lee Peller from an organization called Feminists for Nonviolent Choices. They explained why they oppose abortion, but also oppose criminal penalties for women who have them.
The word penitentiary, which prisons come from, the original meaning was a penitent, one who changes their heart. So you have to look, when you answer this question, putting women in prison in a prison system that's broken, that we incarcerate more people than any other place in the world, that we have so many people with drug and alcohol problems, people with disabilities. The prison system is overcrowded. We incarcerate more than any other country in the world. So you would have to rethink what you were going to do if there was any form of penalty, because putting more people into that, they only get worse in prison. That was my experience as a chaplain. The inmates I saw got worse, not better.
Trump eventually switched and said, just the doctor, not the woman. Should a doctor who performs an abortion on a woman, if it is made illegal, should the doctor face criminal penalty?
Well, I think there's two different things. The doctor is not doing just one abortion as the woman is. He's doing maybe hundreds or thousands of them. He's doing it consciously.
But what if he just does one? Just one. Let's just talk about one.
If he did one, I believe there should be some type of penalty for that. But again, the approach should be, even with a doctor, the approach should be one of restorative justice.
Let me read an email before I get back to your phone calls. From a listener named Sarah. Evan, I had an abortion when I was 25. I've heard some anti-abortion leaders say that choosing abortion is always, quote, desperate and sad. I will tell you that I was not desperate or sad. I made a choice based on my consideration of a wide range of issues. Okay? Is that okay with everyone? Is it okay that I wasn't sad about it? Is it okay that I was thoughtful and that it was the right decision for a number of reasons? I'm not saying I felt great about it. I'm just saying that we seem to pretend that it's always this heart-wrenching, life-altering choice. It's not. I'm evidence of that. I am not a victim. I am a woman. That's from Sarah. Rachel, what do you make of that?
I think that's really tough. So I do a lot of work in the domestic violence field, and we tend to call people survivors rather than victims because it's a matter of getting through something. And I personally feel that as all women in this world, we're victims of institutional violence. So that's what we're talking about here. So this means everything from being worried about catcalling in the streets to making less money to having to deal with the possibility of rape on a daily basis and also being responsible for childcare or for care of our parents. So these are all things that affect our daily lives. And so some people might frame, I would frame this as a violence. She might frame it in a different way. So she mentioned all these different little things that led to her decision. But I think the point here is that she wasn't trying to get pregnant in order to have an abortion. So this was never something that she wanted to happen. She might have done so feeling pretty good about that decision. And I think that it is important to honor that and not assume that everyone's experience is going to be the same.
We'll close the week with a little laughter.
We were laughing because the guests in this particular hour, they're pretty funny, actually, but a lot of people take this subject very seriously. We discussed whether taxpayers in Western New York should pay for a new stadium to keep the Buffalo Bills in town.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said that the league wants Buffalo to build a new stadium after the current lease runs out in 2022.
In this clip, you're going to hear Bill Murray. Really, but before that, you'll hear 13 Wham Sports' Toby Motika, and we'll start with Chuck Wade, a former sports journalist who is now a financial advisor for Brighton Securities.
I think what it all comes back to is that the NFL doesn't care.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right.
They don't care, and that's the problem, is that the NFL doesn't care.
Veronica, they don't care about you, the
Buffalo
fan.
I think the Pegulas know who they need to cater to. I think they know they need to cater to people like Verona, to people like you guys in here. They need to cater to fans. But the NFL's like, well, find a way to cater to people with a lot more money.
And that's
fans,
right. That's
fans
right.
will
they
watch
care.
On TV. Yep. Fans will buy the merchandise. And you know what? The NFL doesn't care about a $120 ticket in the second section
right.
behind an end zone. They don't care about that.
They want to sell those luxury
suites. They'll sell
suites.
It to somebody. They want the suites. They want the TV deals. That's where they want the naming rights of a stadium. That's where the money gets made.
Yep.
And when the Pegulas were buying it and they're meeting with the NFL owners, I have to believe there were some conversations in terms of, this is great, we're really excited, but hey, new stadium, this is part of it. You're going to need to do that. The NFL doesn't care about anything else.
If I'm a betting man, I'm still betting that they do build a new stadium. I'm still betting that that is what happens. They build
a
new one and it goes downtown. Whether that's the right thing to do or not, we'll see in 2030, after some real time has passed. But I definitely, if I had to place a bet, whether it's the right thing or not, I think the pressure from the NFL and the other owners, I think the Pegulas know who they have to please, even though I think they also know who they should really be targeting, and that's the fans.
You know the NFL is a nonprofit organization. It just needs to throw that out there. The NFL is a nonprofit.
Hold on. On that note, we have an email from a listener on that exact note here, and let me go ahead and read that now. And it comes from Richard. He says, when the National Football League and the Bills start paying taxes, they are currently considered nonprofit, right. Then we can begin to talk about when the taxpayers contribute to a new stadium for
them. Valid point.
Yeah. It's a valid point. Can't argue with that. It's a great point. And I go back to the last point, the NFL doesn't care. They've already got the nonprofit stat. I mean, that's ridiculous that it's a nonprofit. Find me an institution that is more for profit than the NFL.
Oh, you know who the NFL is? The NFL is who Bill Murray was chanting about. What was the movie Meatballs, where he's got all the sort of the less popular kids at the camp, and they're trying to win the annual camp competition, and Bill Murray gets them going and a chant that says, it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if we win or lose. It doesn't matter because the girls are still going to go out with those guys because they have all the money.
Even if God in heaven above comes down and points his hand at our side of the field, even if every man, woman, and child held hands together and prayed for us to win, it just wouldn't matter because all the really good-looking girls would still go out with the guys from Moloch because they got all the money. It just doesn't matter if we win or we lose. It just doesn't matter.
That's the NFL.
Meatballs.
They are still
the
going
NFL
for the money. The NFL is meatballs. It's always great when we can work in a little Bill Murray. Speaking of Bill Murray movies, he's in the new Ghostbusters. Are you going to go see it?
I want to. Some people are really excited. Other people are very critical already.
Okay, so the world does not need my opinion, but can I share an opinion on this?
Please do.
Here's the thing about the new Ghostbusters movie. So I heard somebody on Twitter, where all the geniuses are, say that I'm not obligated to like it just because it's female cast. No one is obligated to like it because it's women in the cast or leading the film. You are obligated not to not like it because it's women in the lead. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. I think a lot of people, they just don't want the original movie tampered with.
Oh, come on. Bill Murray.
I'm not saying I agree with them, but think about any remake.
I hope it's great. I agree that the critical reviews have me thinking it's probably somewhat mediocre.
Okay.
The critical reviews are sound like critics who are saying, we hope it's great. Or we're trying to find a reason to like it. But bottom line is, I'll probably see it because I loved the original. I quote it on the show all the time.
Let's do a show on the new one, how it compares to the original.
Okay. How about a whole show on the new Ghostbusters where we don't even mention the feminism and female lead?
Okay.
Like that controversy. Just comparing the two. That would be...
Send us an email if you want to be on the panel.
Revolutionary. That's our weekend plan anyway. Listen, it's been another heavy week in the news and trying to end it on a light note, but we do hope that you have a safe and happy weekend. That does it for this edition of Weekend Connections, a podcast. You can join the conversations on Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM.
And you can always find us on the WXXI mobile app. He's Evan, I'm Megan, and we'll talk to you Monday.